All right. Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and get started with the roll call, see if we have a quorum to go forward.
Joella Sparks.
Here.
Claudia Koch. Pip Feezy.
Yes.
Robert Mackey. Evelyn Pinsgaard. Sarah Batiste. Deb Jepson. Mary Alice Short.
Here.
Debbie Gonzalez. Kayla Hansen.
Here.
Nicole Klupfer. Debbie Coxon.
Here.
Gary Newman. Jennifer Elhard.
Here.
Ryan Keel. Ashley Monroe. Kim Eames. Robin Winant.
Here.
John Clendenin.
If I say not here, will your member put me on the agenda?
Ooh.
I'll consider it. Jennifer Youngberg.
Here.
Walker Wheeler.
Here.
Brad Crick. Kat Williams. Jeanette Altman.
Here.
And you can vote in Brad's place until the list gets through. Mm-hmm. Travis Brinzo. Richard Machida.
Here.
Britton Anderson.
Is there anyone else online that we've not called? By my count, we're one below a quorum. Okay, so what we will do, time is it?
8:00.
Okay, so we're about 10 minutes into the meeting time. We are one short of a quorum. What I'd like to do is we can do one of two things. We can begin immediately an informal discussion whereby I inform you of some items, information from the agenda, and it becomes an informal meeting officially. We won't restart the meeting. Or we can wait 5 minutes to see if anyone else joins us in the hopes that we make a quorum. I leave it up to you all.
I say we wait 5 minutes.
Second.
All right, we'll wait 5 minutes. Thank you for those of you who are here and on time today.
Sorry about that.
Walker, you were on time, I thought.
Close enough, I guess.
Yeah.
Close enough for government work.
Is there a way that if someone has called in and said that they were going to be absent, they can make phone calls to dead people?
I only have two people that...
Yeah, we don't have that many excused notified in advance. So I've started the five-minute clock. And I'm going to step away from the microphone.
Okay.
In case you're wondering, Debbie Gonzalez, you made us a quorum.
Oh, I had to reconcile some travel cards. Sorry about that.
No worries. Come here when you're ready, man. All right, then, everyone. We having taken roll call this meeting is now started in order. We will move to item 1B. For the record, and you've hit record. Okay, so for the record, Deb Gonzalez has joined us, giving us a quorum. 1B, for today's meeting. Any discussion items on the agenda? Hearing none, then we have a motion to approve. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? All right, and I'm sorry, before we took that vote, I should have asked who else joined us online.
Sorry, this is Kat. I thought I had a 9 o'clock meeting that is rescheduled for tomorrow, so sorry for interrupting.
All right. Thank you for joining us. All right, next item then is 1C, approval of the minutes for staff council meeting number 232.
Move to approve with a, I just moved to approve. I think it's fine.
Sorry. I need to amend and add the unit 12 participants, John Clendenin and Jennifer Youngberg, to as present.
All right. Any other changes to the minutes? I'll give you a moment. But only one?
There is something from the Chancellor's report when we had a short discussion related to fumes coming into the building. The last sentence in that paragraph seemed oddly worded. So I'm not sure. I'm sorry I don't have a suggestion for improvement.
The electrical vehicle port?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're not so powerful, but it was just a weird transition. Sorry.
It's not like we have weird conversations here in council. Any other changes to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes for 232 as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
This time I paused for those online.
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Any opposed? Hearing none, we have approved. We have formal minutes for 232. The next item on the agenda is 2, unfinished business, and it's the reorganization working group proposal. PIPS VZ is the lead on that, and we'll present today.
Thanks, Tuella. Well, let's see. We have met 3 times. We have a dozen people working on the reorganization group, and I think it's one of the best groups that I've ever worked with student council, staff council. just lots of ideas, lots of energy, and people really engaged in the conversation. I've really enjoyed our meetings. Like I said, we've had 3 so far. We were hoping to push ourselves really hard and come to you with an agenda or with a proposition today. And we haven't gotten that far, and we realize, well, mostly because of my work schedule, I was out of town all last week, so we're going to take a couple more meetings and hopefully present something at the December meeting. But so far, I'm just going to give you a brief rundown of what we've done. Like I said, we have 12 people who are all very well engaged, and it's been a fun process. We've consolidated a bunch of data that we already have, including the 2011 survey that we did with staff council, just an informal, what are we doing well, what do we need to do better. We've looked at the survey results from the 2012 staff alliance survey of staff around the system. We've looked at both institutional data and participation rates that Nicole has put together for us, to try to paint a picture of where we are right now and what staff feel about staff council, in addition to kind of what our own feelings are being involved with staff council. We then took our 12 peer institutions as defined by the accreditation process and spread those out among the people on the committee, and we researched those, defined how other people, to try to understand how other institutions structured their staff council and maybe get some ideas and spur imagination as to how we could borrow some of their ideas. So we spent half a meeting going through the results of that. We mapped our current functions to the existing committee structure and noticed some discrepancies. So the things that we're looking at right now are committee structure, the staff council organization, and the leadership roles. And we've kind of broken those down into 3 different pieces, and we're brainstorming. We've spent the last session brainstorming about how things might fit better, how we might be addressing things better, how we might organize ourselves to better address the issues that we talk about on a daily basis for staff. So that's where we are right now. I think we've done this group, like I said, has been amazing to work with. It's been a really fun group. We've met 3 times over an hour each, and I imagine we'll have probably another couple of meetings, but want to keep this in a very tight on a tight schedule and have something for you by the next meeting. So that's where we are. If anybody has any questions or if anybody would like to join us, that's fine too. I expect we'll probably have two meetings in the next 2 weeks before I go out of town again. So that's what we're doing.
Any questions for Pips?
Off, but hello.
No.
So are all 12 people
I'm sorry, I'm not sure that's working.
No, it's working.
Oh.
She's just not close enough.
Okay.
There's one person who's not currently on staff council. Yeah. And I'd be happy to have more. It seemed like 12 was. I didn't necessarily need any more people, so I didn't actively recruit anybody. But it's nice to have a voice outside of staff council too. So.
Any other questions? All right. Hearing none, Pips. Again, thank you for taking the lead on this. Your efforts are much appreciated in your retired state. Then we'll move on to public comment. We are just about on time with that. Is there anyone online that wishes to make a public comment? Is there anyone in the room? Hearing none, public comment is closed for meeting 233, officer reports. One thing I'd like to point out, the Chancellor is in President's Cabinet this morning and will join us sometime between 10:30 and 11. So item 5 there, we're a little flexible with that as usual. One thing I know that, in case he doesn't make it, one thing I know that he's going to comment on is the opening of the Chancellor's Cornerstone Award nominations. We will work with the Chancellor's office to get that out far and wide, but I encourage you to do so as well. As you know, that's the Chancellor's recognition of staff and excellence. He is talking. One thing that did come up with this award was the fact that CDAC, what was formerly the Chancellor's Diversity Action Committee, their diversity award was rolled into the Cornerstone Award. And he mentioned at pre-staff last week that he was looking at adding specific diversity language to the criteria for the award. So keep an eye out for that, and I encourage you to put the word out and nominate staff you think are doing a great job in forwarding the mission of the university. As to the rest of my report, most of it will come up in other items on the agenda. I met with President Gamble on the 1st, and it was a good meeting. We kind of rehashed, went over the agenda items here today and also on Staff Alliance's agenda. He also at that point announced the 3.25% compensation increase, handed me the letter announcing it and justifying it. You may know that was 6 days prior to the Board of Regents meeting, where the Regents did in fact approve that compensation increase in the President's budget request. So that FY14 budget request will go forward, or probably has already gone forward, to the Governor's office now that the Regents have approved it. There was a lot up in the air with waiting for the local and state elections to happen and to see how the leadership makeup of the legislature was going to be come January. In talking with the Chancellor at pre-staff, we have good interior representation on the key committees in the legislature, and we'll keep an eye on that. As soon as we get a gauge on how the legislature and the governor's office feel about the budget request, if there's a need for real advocacy in any areas, we'll let you know. Staff governance at the statewide level and at the local level will let you know. Separate from the other items on the agenda, I think that's the extent of my report.
And I don't really have a report this time either. We're going to talk about the rest of it anyway.
Okay.
Eventually, we're going to update a Staff Alliance blog with the answers of our surveys. We've worked on it. A couple of them are ready to go. Should be out in the next couple of days as soon as Joella posts it. So keep your eyes on.
Okay, so then setting aside item 5 for later in the agenda, item 6, the governance reports. I don't see Jennifer Reynolds with faculty, Senator Mari Freitag with ASUAF present. We do have an observer from ASUAF today, but we don't have a formal report from Mari. I also want to remind all of you, I'm taking a class at 1 o'clock on Monday, Wednesdays, Fridays, which has prevented me from participating in Faculty Senate. Claudia has made a couple of reports, but beyond that, we haven't been connected. I have informed Faculty Senate of that situation and that starting in January, I'll be attending their meetings regularly, just so you're aware of that. We'll move on to item 7A, Staff Council Odd Unit Election, and I'll hand it over to Walker.
Where am I? So the election's going on. Is this on?
Yes.
Okay. Hello. There we go. So the Staff Council Odd Unit Elections for next year are going on. We've had 200 and something votes come in, so it's been a pretty decent pool, but it can always be better. So please go out, ask people in your constituency to come to the polls and vote for who they want to have in there. If we have the capability in there, too, to do write-ins, so if anyone wants to stage a write-in campaign at this point in time and they're really interested in being on staff council, then they can do that as well. The election is going to close this coming Monday, so that's not a lot of time between now and then. We have one day, and then I believe we're closing it at midnight on Monday. So that's all I got.
Any questions for Walker? Okay, then B is the compensation increase. The letter is attached. Are there any questions, thoughts, or comments on that? The FY14 increase. I will point out later on in the agenda, we have the Compensation Committee, Brad and Mary Alice are the members of. I did meet with the group last week. I took over the chair of the group because the chair resigned from the committee. We sorted out several ideas, a half a dozen ideas, for discussion. And the reason that I'm bringing this up now is in my conversation now multiple times with President Gamble, I indicated that there are other ways to affect our compensation in a positive manner that aren't increases necessarily. So, for example, a couple of the things that the group is looking at is changes in how you accrue leave. Instead of making it every 5 years, maybe shorten that to every 3 years and so on. So they're working on half a dozen issues right now. I've asked each individual on the committee to take the lead on one issue, review the Board of Regents policy, come up with some ideas, reviewing our peer institutions and so on, and also any comments that we've received from staff support for that issue. They'll draft up a position paper on those issues, and then we'll put those out on the Staff Alliance blog and put them out far and wide and seek input. And at that time, I'll let you know, and I encourage you to really push hard to have people go and comment on the blog and or email the working group. And then once we have those roughly polished and approved by Staff Alliance, I'll take them to the president. But in the conversation about this compensation increase, that came up again, that he recognizes that there are other ways to recognize and reward staff for excellence, and he's open to it. So we're working on that. Yes, sir, Richard.
What's the mechanism for people to make suggestions?
You can send it directly to myself, or if you the Staff Alliance blog, I think it's uastaffalliance.wordpress.com. Make comments there. Either tool will work. That's a good question. Thank you. Is there any comments or questions on B then? All right. We'll move on to the healthcare benefit. Where we are with that, you'll see Gary. You saw Gary's report attached. The next step for that with Alliance is to put the letter from Abel Boltito, the chair of the Joint Healthcare Committee. We're going to put that on the blog as seeking input and comments. He lists, I believe, 7 changes to our healthcare benefit that the Joint Healthcare Committee supports. So we're going to put that out there for feedback. I will tell you that one of the items that's caused a stir is taking away the opt-out. The Joint Healthcare Committee has supported that except for its Staff Alliance members. Staff voted no to that. But this all happened really quickly, let me tell you that. The recommendations went to the Joint Healthcare Committee and they met in a 2-day session, reviewed them, and voted. So it was relatively quick. We didn't have a lot of opportunity for feedback. We are still seeking feedback. Staff Healthcare Committee hasn't taken a position yet on these items, and so we will seek feedback and take a position. But I know at this point we voted no on taking away the opt-out. And so once that, again, that's another item that will go up on the blog in the next couple of days, and I encourage you to put the word out and to comment on the individual items. Were there any questions on Gary's notes or anything else with the healthcare benefit? I will tell you that December is the month when statewide basically approves the changes and any changes to the FY14 plan. That will come out in during the open enrollment season. So we will move quickly to get our input in there before they make their decisions.
So you said there's 7 items that they're voting on?
I can't remember the exact number. If you have the memo there,
yeah.
How many were there?
Well, I'm guessing that it's 12.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
I just wanted to make sure I was looking at the right thing.
Yes, if it's from Abel to the president. Or Donald Smith. Oh, yeah. Review of healthcare report. Yeah, he has listed 12. Likely he took those straight from the memo.
But we don't know which ones are yes or no yet, correct?
In terms of, I'm sorry, what do you mean?
I'll wait till they're done.
For those online, we're pausing. There's an announcement coming across the... There we go.
So we don't know which ones are yes or no or...
What I'll do is I'll put out that memo, and all of those that are listed in Abel's memo were approved by the Joint Healthcare Committee. But I wanted to make sure you knew that staff opposed and voted no on the opt-out. Otherwise, I believe that the staff representatives voted yes from the memo.
So on number 4... spousal surcharge.
I believe they voted yes.
But what does it mean for opting out only? Spousal surcharge of other insurance waiving for opting out only.
What my interpretation of this from what I know is that for the opting out, I can't opt out as a university employee from university insurance to go on my spouse's insurance. That's what's coming. And in this case, if my spouse has insurance somewhere else but chooses to be on mine, I pay extra.
Okay. But we don't know how much extra?
No.
Okay.
It wasn't me, was it? Okay, any other questions then on the healthcare? Yes. Debbie, we'll start with Debbie.
I have a question about the opt-out as well.
Uh-huh.
What if the spouse's insurance is another UAF employee or UA employee? Is it they still cannot opt out if they're included on their spouse's insurance?
That's the one
insurance?
Caveat.
That's
one exemption, yes. Dual university employees, one can opt out.
Okay.
Yeah.
A further question to that is that somebody I know recently went through benefits orientation, and they did warn new hires that opting out may not be an option for very long. They alluded to some sort of surcharge in lieu of doing being covered. Is that something that you're aware of, or did they just misunderstand? Basically paying a flat fee for opting out instead
that,
of...
That was discussed,
okay.
Yes, but I think they, I think that was a middle ground.
Okay.
But I think they're flat saying, no, you can't opt out.
Okay, thank
but,
you.
Yeah, but again, nothing's firm.
Sure.
Yeah, even though JHCC supports it and I believe the administration supports it, we might still be able to change their minds.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have one more question on item 10. So if you're a 30-hour or plus employee, there won't be an extra charge. But if you're under 30 hours, there could be an extra charge? Or no coverage at all?
You know, the details on that, I'm not sure. I know that there was discussion about a different premium for part-time employees, and what the threshold was, I'm not sure. I think it's probably moved, you know, whether it's 20 or 30. Or
right.
So the details, I'm not sure. What I will do, when I put that letter up, I'll announce it, and it gives more specific detail.
Okay.
This it looks like there might have been a little confusion in the translation here. And Debbie, you had a question?
There was some talk at previous meetings. Is this on?
Yes.
About Primera picking up medical tourism in January 2013. Has there been any further discussion that UA would pick up that benefit?
That is still on the table for discussion. I do know it wasn't specifically listed in what's already been approved by JHCC. I think they're still discussing it.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions then on the healthcare benefit? Okay, I see that Jennifer with Faculty Senate has come in the room. Did you wish to make a statement today? All right, I would welcome her to the table then, and we'll temporarily move back to item 6A. Yeah.
I guess we'll turn it on. Good morning. We on?
Can you hear her?
I think it's on.
Okay.
I'm hearing little clicks when I mess with it. All right. So I haven't seen you for a few months, and I have a few items to pass on that you might be interested in. Faculty Senate has started ramping up with its activities for the year. We have several things in the works, and one that has been concluded. We have conducted a reapportionment, and this was on the request of the library faculty. Since the libraries have been moved out of the College of Liberal Arts, they were eligible and they had enough faculty, so they requested that we redo the representation for the entire university, and we've done that. And that will be in effect next spring. It's kind of a big deal. This is only the second time in 12 years that the Senate has done this, so that's why I'm mentioning it. We have had an ongoing discussion with the Chancellor about commencement, and I know the staff were interested in this because I think it started as a staff question / request. The Senate's been discussing this since a year ago, September, and we have finally concluded the discussion. The Chancellor was at our meeting last month, and we conducted a poll by show of hands. There were two questions. One was, would you be more likely or less likely to attend commencement if it were on a Saturday rather than Sunday? And the answer was almost unanimously, it doesn't matter. The one substantive response we got was from the music department, which said it would be easier if it were on a Saturday, easier to assemble the musicians. The Chancellor was there and held this conversation, so he heard this response. The other question was about holding a separate ceremony or an additional ceremony for the master's graduates. The idea being that at this point they only get the level of recognition that's the same as that of the bachelor's degrees, and we would like to give them some additional recognition. The format for doing this it is still very fuzzy, and we didn't come to a conclusion on that, but we tossed around some ideas. But the one that was conclusive was that the faculty don't object to moving commencement to Saturday. Okay. The next issue is that we're very concerned about advising of students. We want this to improve. We think it's very important. And one of the aspects of this is good information about the courses. So we're talking about different ways of expanding information about all of the courses, one of which might be to post the syllabi online in a central repository. There are some hesitations about that, but if we don't do that, we may take another tact, such as setting up expanded course descriptions in lieu of an actual syllabus. So we're looking at that. It's an ongoing discussion. And the Senate in our last meeting agreed to discontinue or eliminate three graduate programs. Those are the Master's in General Science and the Master's in Teaching in Physics and Mathematics. All three of those haven't had students for a number of years, but it is, again, a rather significant event to have the university, with the Senate's agreement, choose to eliminate programs. These are the third, fourth, and fifth that have been eliminated in the last year or so, and it's, to my recollection, this is the first time it's happened in many years. So there was a proposal also to eliminate the PhD in mathematics. This one elicited a long discussion and objection from the mathematics department, and we've tabled that one, and we'll take it up again in December. And those are the topics I wanted to mention. Are there any questions on those or anything else?
So have you made a conclusion as to whether to move commencement to a Saturday, or still in the process of thinking about it?
Well, it's not our decision. The chancellor will make the decision. He and the provost have been discussing this. And my understanding was that he wanted to be sure before he made the decision that whatever he did would not decrease the presence of the faculty and other and some of the students at the commencement ceremony. And so the answer he's gotten is that moving it to Saturday would not decrease the presence of the faculty. The faculty didn't object, and in fact, perhaps slightly preferred it from the angle of the music department. My impression is that he's quite interested in this possibility of moving commencement to Saturday and of putting all of the events on one day rather than 2 days. But that isn't to say that he's decided to do it. But I think as of our last meeting, he was favorably inclined to doing that. Does that answer the question?
Yes.
Yes.
Could you restate the three master's programs that are eliminated?
Sure. Master's in General Science and MAT, so MS in General Science, Master of Science, and MAT in Physics and MAT in Mathematics. We also had eliminated the MAT in Biology in the September meeting. That was one of the previous ones that was eliminated. So the university no longer offers MAT degrees at all. Anything else? Yes.
I was hoping for an update on the LMS review.
Oh, I forgot. That's a good question. And we do have some progress on that. What's happened is that the Senate has had an online discussion about it with some very good input from a couple of faculty who are familiar with other systems. And we're being cautious about it. The e-learning office that's headed by Carol Gehring has offered to run a pilot in the spring semester, and they are moving ahead with this. They will be running them with web-based courses primarily, but they want to use faculty who also teach regular face-to-face courses so that we get a good impression or good feedback on these systems that are alternates to Blackboard. If you know, for those of you who didn't catch the reference, we're looking at whether to continue using Blackboard or to switch to one of three alternatives that are on the market now. So the e-learning office keep wanting to call it CDE. The e-learning office will be running those pilots in the spring with encouragement and collaboration from faculty. Perhaps something like 9 courses is what they're thinking about. Anything else?
Jennifer, I'm sorry. You said there was an elimination of an MAT in physics and an MAT in math. What is an MAT? I've never heard of that.
It's a master's in teaching. Yes, and it's intended for people who want to be teachers but who want to have a combined background in education and in the subject matter.
But now, did you also say you eliminated the PhD in math?
That was slated for elimination.
Okay.
It was recommended for elimination through the program review last year and by the Chancellor's Cabinet. And then it came to Faculty Senate for a vote on whether Senate would agree to that. We don't have veto power over this, but we do have a voice in the process. And the open discussion on the floor of the Senate between the senators and the representatives from the math department was very active and interesting, and I think has spurred some action on the part of the math department. So we're going to take it up again in December. We haven't made a decision on it yet. Yes, welcome.
I have one last question, and it's nothing we've talked about today so far. Have you guys ever looked at the finals on Saturdays and impacts related to those?
I don't know. What kind of impact are you thinking of?
Just not being the same date or the same day of the week as the rest of the class schedule.
Impact. Impact in terms of?
For students and their ability to make it to them.
Oh, no, we haven't.
Okay.
Because it's a class requirement and is scheduled at the beginning of the semester, we just expect them to do it.
Okay.
I
only ask because a lot of people or a lot of students that I've run into don't get it at the beginning, even though it's in the syllabus. They either sometimes they ignore the syllabus or they don't check it at all. But I do recall a time when there was never like a final on a Saturday. It seemed like it was always lined up pretty well with the day of the week. So
it probably, and I haven't been involved in scheduling it, but it probably has to do with the other constraints on the schedules. That have, for example, there's now a study day or reading day, and there are the mesters and the summer sessions have caused compression of the rest of the academic schedule. There are requirements for when commencement has to be, and so these things have become hard to schedule around.
Oh, yeah.
But I had not thought about any specific problems with Saturday exams. What we have thought about is with regard to switching commencement to a Saturday, we would have to look at the exam schedule there because there are some at least on Friday, and I'm not sure if there are some on that Saturday as well. So that would have to be changed.
All right, thank you.
All right, any other questions? Any online? All right, thank you very much. So with that, we'll move. And actually, I heard someone sign on.
Yeah, this is Gary Newman. Sorry, I'm running a little late here, so I'm calling in.
No worries, Gary. Thank you. We're on 7D, the employee tuition benefit. As of November 1st and a couple of days afterwards, nothing's changed there. When I met with President Gamble, he indicated that the tuition benefit was under review by general counsel. And that when it came out, we would know about it. So as far as I know, I had checked the web, and it's not up on the web yet, the changes. So we're still waiting to see what comes of that. The staff resources website, the UAFHR Staff Council Resources site, this was a time for you all to make comments on the various changes. I want to thank Nicole and Jennifer and Barbara in HR. They moved very quickly to make these changes. Are there any questions or comments? Does anyone have for the ad hoc? They're not finished, certainly, but they wanted to bring it to you for your review.
So I wrote down some things. For one thing, I guess I never knew this website even existed. Even for people who have been around 12 years, it would have been nice to maybe be directed. Maybe it's new, though.
No, it's not. Actually, Staff Council worked with HR to update. This kind of comes out of the fact that we've asked for some time for a staff handbook.
Mm-hmm.
And the middle ground was a web page just for staff for informational links. And so, no, it's not new. It's been substantively reorganized by our ad hoc group.
One thing that I would have liked to have seen on the front page was how to get banner access, or the banner access forms. Mm-hmm. They were kind of found buried under, you know, OIT or the computer section. It would have been nice to see a link to the travel website. And there would have been, it would have been nice to see a link to join different listservs around campus. And under the email section, it would have been nice to see a direct link on how to get one or be assigned one. And I also thought that a link to UA Online possibly didn't need to be there, because I figured if you were a brand new employee, you already knew how to figure out UA Online, because that's how you would have had to apply to a job. But maybe they're just trying to put all resources on one page.
I'm sorry. Apply to a job?
Oh, okay. I was getting them mixed up then.
Yeah, you had one comment earlier after banner and travel. What was the?
A link to, I've seen this page and I haven't seen it in a while, a list of all the different listservs that you can join around campus.
Those are good suggestions. It sounds like, that maybe there's a, it's a, like a work tools, the tools you need to do your job,
mm-hmm.
so to speak, and maybe that's a section we look at. Walker.
I had a comment kind of related to it, but kind of also related to the onboarding site of the HR website area. One of the things that I've put together in the past for people is a worksheet of the different services, web services that are out there. And, I mean, some of them may be obvious now, but it may be handy to have either just a grouping of those work tools. And I'll go back to when it was much more confusing here, when we had things like Meeting Maker and we had things like Blackboard, that when you'd say Blackboard, someone wouldn't know to go to classes.uaf.edu. So maybe the names that which people refer to it by, as well as the link to it, because it always doesn't make sense. So the other way around. Anyway, but I can follow up with a list of some of the resources later on.
Would you actually forward your sample? Do you have a sample of what you were talking about?
It's a really old sample.
We might forward that to Nicole and myself.
Okay.
Not this one, Nicole Klopfer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Not this one. Any other comments on 7E? Again, I want to thank those involved. The update was much needed, and so far I think it looks great. We will, once we incorporate your ideas and make another round of changes, we'll probably do a little mini PR letting people know that this is out there and available. Any other questions on that then? We'll move on to 7F, the grievance process review. We have, as a part of Staff Alliance, we have an ad hoc group working on the grievance process and reviewing it with Statewide. And I think I've told you all this before. We have a person from Statewide that Donald Smith, the chief HR officer, put as our contact point for the administration. And we had a good discussion as a part of Staff Alliance. And they're making some forward steps. And hopefully in early December, the Staff Alliance representative that's working on this review will be in Anchorage as a part of the Joint Healthcare Committee, and I'm scheduling them to meet with the Statewide contact So hopefully, this is going to take some time. It's a long process to review, and I want to be sure, you know, again, this is something that the administration has been open to. They are open to a review and potential improvements in the grievance process. And so I want to take our time and really thoroughly look at it. I encourage you, any of you that you have, if you have specific experiences with the grievance process yourself, or you know someone who has, if you would, and they're interested in and willing to talk about that experience, if you'll have them contact myself, that would be much appreciated, because we really want to get into working on the fairness of the process, that the process is understandable to the average staff person, and not stacked against them right off the bat. So if there's no questions on that, I'll move to G, the Women's Center, and OMAD update on that. Claudia is our representative to the Student Diversity Task Force, and I'll let her.
For the Student Diversity Task Force for OMAD, we met a couple of times so far, and right now we're in the fact-gathering stage where we just invite people over. We had people from international programs over, and next time we're going to have people from ISS over just telling us what they're doing and trying to find out what else we need to have on campus for diverse students, international students. It's a very diverse group, which is kind of fun being on. So I keep you updated. So right now we're in the fact gathering stage. And then once we have all the facts, we're going to come up with recommendations if we want to open up OMAD again, or if we open up again, how are we going to open up, or if we just change the structure totally. So thank you.
Jennifer?
Is there a list of the membership posted somewhere?
We can get that posted. I received a copy of their appointment letters that listed the membership.
Okay, I haven't, so I'd be appreciated.
Okay.
Yeah. Even if you just send it to me.
Okay.
I can send it to her.
Okay. So as it relates to the Women's Center, the Women's Center advisory group has been appointed by the chancellor. As you might recall, at his last meeting, he said that was coming out any time. That group has been appointed. Carol Gold, Professor Emeritus, is the chair, or has been tasked with putting together the first meeting of the group. And if you might recall, this is a group to advise the Women's Center on their mission and advocate for the Women's Center as well. So another thing that's kind of come up with this, I was approached by a student group to work with them on a forum for discussion of OMAD and how that all came about, and also next steps with it. And so I'm in the process of working with the Diversity Task Force, and hopefully they will ask the student group to host them, to host the forum and host the task force. And then I see it as an opportunity for the task force to get public input. And so that's one more thing on my to-do list. And if there aren't any other questions, I'll move on to H, the RISE Board update. I do have several emails from Ian Olson and Michelle Hebert regarding this issue. It appears that Ian was put on the RISE Board as the staff council representative, unbeknownst to us, and maybe even to him. So I will talk to both of them. Essentially, my intent was to bring Ian Olson back to this group, and if you find him an acceptable representative to the RISE Board from staff council, we can leave things as they are. If it's your preference to have him come and speak to you, or if there's any other staff council representatives that would like to serve on the RISE Board, put your names in at that time. So I guess I'm asking your guidance on this.
This is Gary Newman. You know, I talked to Ian about it, and he said he was happy to come and report to us, if you will, with an invitation, I suppose. So we put him on. I don't know if you want to put him officially on a speaker list or something that.
I guess, Gary, I'm surprised by that, because I actually got an email from Ian saying, "What? Wait, you want me to come to a regular meeting and report?" So I'm not getting that same perspective. But
that was a couple months ago. But maybe something's changed. You know.
Okay, we can iron that out, but any other comments or thoughts as to how we should go forward with this?
I personally would very much support Ian being our representative as long as he's reporting here. I think one of the things that we've struggled with is, you know, a big workload for a relatively small number of people. So if there's people my personal feeling is if there's people outside of staff council that want to get involved in some of these things, that's fine, as long as there's a continuity and they're reporting to us the information that we should have as a group. So I would support that and as a way of kind of spreading the wealth of responsibility.
Walker?
Yeah, I would too. I just want to see a report coming back from the group.
Okay. Any, Mary Alice?
Can you tell me what RISE stands for?
Gary, help me.
What was the question?
What RISE stands for?
Review of infrastructure and sustainability, something or another. It's a very challenging acronym.
Close?
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Yeah.
Am I hearing from the...
I would just say one thing is they do provide pretty regular minutes and such like that, and I don't know if that's the sort of thing that would constitute a report, but that's an option for something so they don't have to recreate yet something more.
Am I hearing that the group supports Ian's continued service in this role?
Yeah, I would agree with everyone else about, you know, no problem with them continuing. But I would argue against Gary that minutes aren't the same thing as a report.
Yeah, I'm just asking the question. They've got some documentation they can provide, or at least he can draw from to provide a report.
Do we have a motion? Do we have a motion putting forward or supporting Ian Olson's service on the RISE board as a representative of staff council, conditional on his reporting to staff council?
So moved.
Any further discussion, comments, or questions? I have a first, a motion, and a second. Hearing none, then all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Anyone else online?
Aye.
All those opposed? All right, thank you. That was easy. We
Excuse
are scheduled.
Sorry, I looked up RISE, and it is Review of Infrastructure, Sustainability, and Energy. Just the
All right.
full acronym.
All right, we have next on the agenda a 5-minute break. Is it the wish of the group that we have the break or that we plow through?
Well, we're right
Keep
on
going.
Time for a break.
We're on. All right, we have a break. 5 minutes. All right, I think we're. Okay. So for everyone, I think we're ready to come back to order. All right, so we'll hop back into the agenda with item 8A under new business, methods of communication. Is everyone still with us online? You can hear us?
Yes.
All right, thank you. So 8A, methods of communication, for the members of the admin committee, remind me if I miss anything here. I'm looking at my notes and they're not as complete as they usually are. So the point behind this item is questions about the UAA Fairbanks Staff Council blog versus the UAA Staff Alliance blog. So, and what we have known for some time, we've had challenges with communicating out to our constituents. And so just as kind of a heads up to all of you, and appreciate your feedback and response. We're going to pull what was Unit 7's blog back underneath probably the chair of staff affairs, myself, and Nicole Dufour. We'll have access to that blog for updating to that blog, and that will be a tool for staff council to put the word out about issues and concerns and get feedback. one of the three of us or all of the three of us will be regularly monitoring comments on that blog. And so if you recall, you know, the confusing part here is we have local issues and then we have statewide issues. So anytime that there that something's put on the UAF Staff Council blog that's for statewide issues, you know, we will run it through this group if necessary, but otherwise forward it on up to Staff Alliance as input on issues. And then for local issues, you know, they'll come here either through an agenda item or through staff affairs or however. I just wanted to inform you of this new approach with the blogs. I will tell you, as chair of Staff Alliance, we are about to dump a whole bunch of really important information on the Staff Alliance blog. And we got really good, strong hits on that blog in the first couple of days that we launched it. We also got a lot of referral traffic from the UAF Staff Council blog. So we had someone had posted, made a post to it referring to Staff Alliances, and it brought us almost 200 hits. So the UAF Staff Council blog does get some action. It gets viewed by staff. So I don't really want it to go away. I think we should keep it for issues. So this body, it's another method or tool for this group to get input and take votes and pass actions and on up to Staff Alliance. So this is just the point of this. Item 8A, Methods of Communications, in part was to, one, remind you that about getting the word out about your responsibilities as representatives on Staff Council to communicate with your constituents. And there's more on that. And then the other was the blogs and the role of each of the two blogs. So if there's no comments or questions on the blog.
I had one question on the Staff Alliance blog. And one of the things I know we were chatting about is the ability to post minutes and such like that. And I didn't know, maybe you brought that up earlier, but is that, how do those two tie together?
To post the minutes of Staff Alliance meetings?
Yeah, I mean minutes, agendas, you know, such like that.
I mean, they're postable, absolutely.
Yeah. Is that something that would go through the blog, or are we still waiting for statewide governance office to get staffed?
We are still waiting for that office to be staffed. I have been doing, other than travel, I have been doing everything for Staff Alliance. So, yes, we are still waiting for staff to fill that position so that someone can put together the minutes and we can get current on, we can get all the websites for governance at UA current.
Okay, so the blog, the Staff Alliance blog, is not taking the place of the regular website?
No.
Okay.
Not at this point. But that's a good question, but not at this point, no.
Yeah, okay. Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. Any other questions on the blogs?
Which state moderators were you, Nicole, and who else?
And the chair of staff affairs for UAF, yes. Yeah, Mary Alice is the chair of staff affairs.
So there's going to be two blogs. One is the Staff Alliance blog, and one is going to be called the UAF Staff Council blog, which was previously Unit 7 blog?
Yes.
Okay.
Bingo. Okay. The other methods of communication, the other point to the methods of communications was we have listservs set up that are for each of your units. What we're finding, though,
and I like it. Don't change that.
Oh yeah, yes, ma'am. what we're finding, though, is that some representatives have their own listservs that they've set up in their role, current and former representatives. So when word goes out to get the word out on an issue, it's going out to the staff list, all staff list. It's going out to the staff council listservs, and it's going out to representatives' individual lists. My concern here is that all necessary? And I know some of you are going, but wait a minute, you were just complaining because we don't communicate enough. I get multiple copies, and that's sometimes will tick people off, will, you know, upset people to get three versions or three copies of something. So I encourage you as representatives to use your formal UAF Staff Council unit blog or listserv, and only that, because then, one, we know where the communications are coming from, and two, we know they're only going where they're supposed to be going, and there's no duplication of effort or duplication of emails. And I think Nicole wants to say something.
If anybody needs access to theirs, please let me know, because I can help you get access and figure out
okay.
how to log in.
Okay, Richard?
One quick question about just verification. I was under the impression that anything that went out on the unit list was moderated. That's why I've never used it. Is it or not?
No.
No.
Representatives are supposed to be listed. Representatives and alternates are supposed to be listed as people who have administrative access to it, and they can configure it, but they're not supposed to be moderated. Now, where some confusion has come in for some people is where they have multiple email addresses that represent who they are and what their actual email account is. So if they get added with their UA username at AlaskaEDU and not their first name dot last name, if they set one up, then that causes some confusion for them. But even that can be worked around for the representatives and alternates.
Okay. Haven't heard anything about it.
Okay. Any other questions on the Staff Council listservs?
Well, I just wanted to make one comment. I know that I really try when I get a message from whoever concerning Staff Council, I try to make a point of who it's going out to. So if it just says, oh, this just went to our body of people, I go, oh, this is some information I might need to share with my constituents. So I either, you know, copy and paste and take out what's good or take out what's bad or what they should or should not know. But if I see that Nicole sent a message out unit-wide, mm-hmm. you know, I don't bother, you know, forwarding it. I already know people are getting it, so.
Okay. I think that's one thing that's really important to be clear, that Nicole will either send to all the listservs or she'll send it, you know, or she'll leave it to you.
Correct.
To send it specifically to your unit. And that's where you could be writing up your minutes or your report on this meeting and sending it. Did I hit it all?
Just that when I send it, if I send it straight to you, it'll usually have a note to pass it on to your constituents. Mm-hmm. But if you see that it's come to you via
your unit listserv.
By your unit listserv, then that means your unit got it. But if you have questions, give me a call or email me.
Okay. Any other comments or questions then on 8A? Okay, we have then B, external committees. And the reason that this came up is that I was informed that Gary's seat on the Master Planning Committee had expired, his term. And then we kind of looked into this, all of our appointments to external committees, and discovered a little tangled web. In any case, Master Planning Committee, the term there is up. There, the Chancellor is requesting an appointment letter, either reappointing Gary or appointing someone else. I guess today I'm asking you if there's anyone that wants to step forward, or do you wish to reappoint Gary to the Master Planning Committee? Richard?
Yes, I would be interested.
You would be interested?
Gary wants to continue on.
Okay.
Yeah, this is the first I've heard they've finally gotten around to figuring that out. I thought we had an appointment letter last year. It's been kind of interesting, because we've been trying. One of the things I've been working on is getting their website up to date, which would include the new members and such like that. So I'm interested in continuing to serve for probably just one more year, but or one more term, however they want to do that.
Okay, it is a 3-year term.
It's a 3-year term. Well, that's. No, I'm puzzled about that as well.
Okay.
I hadn't seen any communication about this other than they were working on trying to update the membership list.
Okay, so we have Richard is interested but would step aside for Gary to continue to serve. Gary's interested in another year. Is it the wish?
Well, another term, whichever.
Another term. All right.
Yeah.
Anyone else still interested? And would you like me to make the appointment, or do you want to vote today? No one says anything. All right, I'll make the decision then today to reappoint Gary to serve another term. I will commit to this spreadsheet that lists all external membership and their terms being updated and ready for your review. This is typically something we do in the spring. It will go out in advance so that you all have time to see if there's a position you're interested in, and an opportunity to write up your interests to the group. Gary, I'm also going to appoint Richard as your alternate.
That'd be just great.
Okay. And I'll send that email to the chancellor then, informing him. Any other comments or questions on 8B then? All right, hearing none, we'll move on to C, the discussion of communications and advocacy merger. It includes an attachment, a draft motion to place communications under advocacy. Are there any comments or questions on this?
You get to this or the motion, though?
So we let me read the motion out loud as a draft so you know where we're coming from with this. We have a motion to place communications under university advocacy and to dissolve the ad hoc communications committee. The motion reads, the UAF staff council moves to place the previous charge of the ad hoc communications committee under the university advocacy committee. Staff council further moves to dissolve the ad hoc communications committee. Communications will remain part of University Advocacy's charge until further determinations are made regarding the reorganization of staff council. Effective immediately, the rationale. The purpose of the current ad hoc communications committee was recently reviewed by the administrative committee, at which time it was determined that communications was part of the stated mission of the University Advocacy Committee. Further, the reorganization working group plans to propose changes to the structure of staff council by the end of the calendar year. Proposed changes could result in significant alterations in the current committee structure. So we can have a discussion. Go ahead, John wants to make a statement regarding the motion.
I'm not opposed to the reorganization. I've only had one initial discussion with Nicole to this point by telephone, so we really haven't had any further discussions beyond that. Like I said, I'm not opposed to the restructuring, but I think it's a little bit too soon. We haven't really thought it out and discussed how to go about this or leadership role or dividing up the tasks and whatnot. I think there's a big flurry for staff council to be moving ahead and doing something, but there's also we're getting nowhere fast in the same respect. So big desire to make change, but we're not getting anywhere very quickly. I think it's a bad way to move forward with work in communications when we're starting off with a serious lack of communication to begin with. I think it needs a little more work before we move.
Okay.
Ad hoc would be over by November.
As you might recall, ad hoc was a temporary committee. It had an end date of November 2012. So a decision needs to be made on its future, whether to dissolve it and place it in the advocacy committee or extend it or just dissolve it.
So kind of going along with what John just said, if this was to happen, does this mean everyone on the communications committee automatically joins the advocacy committee?
Yeah.
Sort of. Actually,
I don't know. That's the point.
No, the important thing to remember here is that the ways that the bylaw
bylaws defined advocacy was there is a communication component specifically written into that. There's also the ability for any chairperson to create a subcommittee. So it could function exactly as it has, but it have a report up to the advocacy committee. So in my mind, there's largely no change here. Not for good, not for bad, but a restructuring of, okay, communications, we have a group now that's dedicated to it. They should continue under the advocacy group because that's where it was originally defined in our bylaws that we would do that. So that's just my opinion. And what we have in the bylaws, of course. So,
any other questions?
What does, and John, this is not directed at you. What does the communications group do?
Are you asking me?
I mean, because we were just kind of talking about communications just, 10 minutes ago with the new blogs and how to use the listservs. And I know I communicate personally myself to my constituents. Mm-hmm. Is the communications group supposed to be doing something above and beyond that?
Well, I think originally, and Walker and John will correct me if I'm wrong, I think I'm partially correct in saying that the communications group was created because we felt there were challenges with communications, both out to constituents and then back from constituents to us and on up. And we, the role was initially for them to come up with methods of communicating. And since then we've, created the listservs, the formal listservs. But another task was, in my mind, was communicating more about what staff council does, what we do, and the impacts that we have. And, that was their original mission, if I'm correct, John.
And some of the things we left off last were talking about new staff council members coming in and making sure that they were given the tools and the training to learn to use and to know how to use them, to know how to use the listservs, know where the blogs were located, how to post to them, what our roles and responsibilities are as staff council members are and should be, what's being done, what's not being done. So those are kind of the last tasks that we were working on.
Any questions online?
No, I'll follow up with John and we'll formulate a plan. This is Nicole, the key.
Okay. So does the body wish to take action today?
I think it should be tabled till our next meeting. And then John and Nicole can have more chance to discuss it.
Okay. With the understanding, though, that after this meeting, communications it doesn't exist because we set an end date for the committee. Any other comments? We have one before us at the group that we table the issue until the December meeting, and John and Nicole or Nikki have had more time to get together.
Just a point of order, if we move to table, there's no discussion. If we move to postpone till the next meeting and extend the communication committees for till the next meeting, then that might cover the basis.
When is our next meeting, by the way?
Like the 19th
December meeting.
December 19th. Yeah. I won't be here anyway.
Oh, John. Yeah, John won't be here.
It is.
We're looking that up, but likely John won't be here for the December meeting.
It is during soft closure week.
Oh, it is the week before Christmas. Yes,
uh-huh.
Potential soft closure. So I need someone to tell me what you want to do.
If the point is to restructure it, put it on, just move forward and work out the details as we go along.
I personally didn't see a need for the motion. I mean, personally, because we already had it defined in the bylaws, so that's just me.
Mm-hmm. That was Walker for those online, a perspective that we didn't need the motion. by bylaws, the committee was set to dissolve in November this month, and the communication tasks already outlined are listed in the bylaws for the University Advocacy Committee. Comments, questions, motions? Move to toss out the motion and let what will be, will be?
So moved.
Second.
Does that work?
Let me ask for clarification, John and Juella. That means we're just going to let the motion fall and the committee is dissolved, and we don't need to have anything clarified in a motion, so we can just not go any further with this. Is that correct, everyone?
Seems that way to me.
All right.
Is everyone clear on that? And please don't hesitate to ask questions if you're unclear, especially online. What we're suggesting is this motion goes away. It hasn't been formally moved. Communications committee dissolves as per bylaws.
I'd encourage to join advocacy.
Right. It's membership encouraged to infuse advocacy. So was that a motion?
I think it was seconded it even.
Any further comments or questions?
Call for a vote.
I heard a call for a vote. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
All right.
All right.
Majority of voters.
There we have it. I'll explain. Whew. Then we move on to 9 and guest speakers. We have none for this meeting. We invited none for this meeting. Item 10, internal committee reports, advocacy. Nicole indicates they've not met.
Correct.
All right, then we're on to Walker and DMR. Right. He's got lots going on.
Yeah, why is that? So when we met, we were charged by Juella to actually go and review what we had in the bylaws as it pertained to people being able to be listed on the ballot, and this is specifically representatives during the election process, and whether or not they could be listed if they had supervisor approval or not. So we drafted two possible motions, one that said, yes, you have to have supervisor approval, the other that said, no, you don't. And we're just clarifying it in the bylaws, and it's attached to the agenda here. So again, one that just says, yes, we want to require supervisor approval before we actually put someone on the ballots, and one that says you don't need supervisor approval. The addition comes under Section 3E, Subpiece 2. We've added a Clause C in either case. One of them adds the statement, a successful candidate election to office is valid upon supervisor's approval. That's the one where we don't require it ahead of time. The one where we do require it ahead of time, we've added a clause that says, in order to be listed on the ballot, a candidate must have supervisor approval. So what we're bringing this to you for is a decision for one or the other so that we can have this clear when people ask us in the future if they have to have supervisor approval ahead of time or not. Does this make sense? Does what I'm stating make sense?
I think to have your name on the ballot, you don't even know if you're going to be elected or not. I think after you get elected, yes, then you could have supervisor approval.
Right, but by the same point, if you're listed on the ballot, you're taking away from votes that someone else could be getting to get into office who actually wants to be. I don't see it as a big deal, but that can be the case.
Well, the other part of the reason that this came forward is that we don't want to create an opportunity for conflict between an employee and a supervisor, or a supervisor and staff counsel. So if someone's name goes on the ballot and they don't have supervisor approval, will then that fact be applied as pressure to the supervisor? I'm on the ballot. I've been elected. You can't save face unless you let me go forward. You know, so I think that's why these motions were brought forward, because of the concern of creating an opportunity for conflict between a supervisor and employee around staff council publicly. You know, if they want to have the discussion in the office prior to the ballots, that's great, that's them. But then when it gets on our ballot, it begins to involve us. Kayla.
This is Kayla. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. My thoughts on that are, you know, we need to know, I mean, if somebody gets voted in and they have a lot of votes, regardless of supervisor approval and the conflict that could arise from it, truth be told, they, you know, our body has voted them in. And I think that voice needs to be heard too. And the supervisor, you know, if it's putting pressure on them, it shouldn't be, but it should be known and noted that this person received the most votes, which means as far as what we do on staff council, we want them there. And so in some ways, I think not asking for supervisor approval or not expecting it ahead of time is a good way of kind of saying, hey, this person was voted in, this is who we want. And then we, you know, the supervisor can take into account that part of, you know, all of our job, our responsibilities is to staff council. And to find somebody that we want on staff council, I think is more important, especially considering our dwindling numbers. And so I think supervisors just kind of need to take that as it is. I mean, regardless if there's friction or not.
John?
I would, in that same vein, you know, from the Chancellor's office, he's encouraging supervisors to allow people to attend staff council. If you put a supervisor in the position of being able to deny them being on a ballot to begin with, I think you're causing a bigger problem than you're not.
They already have that ability.
To not even be on the ballot?
To say, no, you cannot serve.
I'm not talking about serving. I'm talking about being put on the ballot for potential.
Right, but as it stands right now, we have a two-pronged process where we take the nominations. There's an email that gets sent out to the individual. They report back whether or not they do or don't want it. And then they include their supervisor information, and the supervisor approves or declines. And we're not listing any of the ones where the supervisors are declining right now.
So the supervisor's declining that they be on the ballot, or
declining that they be able to be a representative or an alternate.
Right, but now you're talking about adding the supervisor from allowing them to be on the ballot completely.
Same. That's what we're. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes.
And I would say no, that we should allow that person to be on the ballot, because if you have staff that are saying, yes, we want this person.
But keep in mind, whether or not they can actually take that time to serve is something the supervisor is considering. For example,
but that's a different.
No, it's not. Determining whether or not the person is going to be able to have that time should occur before they are able to go forward in that process. If they absolutely can't serve, there's no purpose in going further on the ballot. So that's my opinion, at least.
And I agree with that, because I may vote for somebody else.
Yes.
That now is thrown out. My vote was thrown out.
Completely ignored.
Kayla.
My only thoughts on that are is that the employee, I think, has at least some say in that if they accept the nomination, if they know their job, they can't handle it. We always hear it from them, not their supervisor, that my job duties right now can't allow for me to be on staff council. But I think in some ways I still feel this is more the nominee's responsibility more than the supervisor's at this point, because, again, in looking at a bigger picture, I think that process by putting the supervisor's decision within the nomination inhibits really staff being allowed to kind of make that choice on who we want on staff council. And I think that's one of the ways that we need to generate interest in staff council. So I just think it's a conflict of interest on this.
Let me outline the process for a little bit and for a moment. So essentially we put the call out for nominations and we get a nomination, and as a part of the process we ask them to accept or decline, and we ask for their supervisor information. And we contact the supervisor and say, do you approve this individual's participation or consideration as a staff council representative? And if they get back to us, where this is coming into play is whether or not we have that approval in hand prior to putting together the ballot. So the supervisor may not get back immediately, and then we're ready. It's time to get the ballots out, and the question is, do we put their name on the ballot or not? Because we don't have supervisor approval for them to participate in staff council. Jeanette.
What is the proposed mechanism for if somebody does get elected without supervisor approval and then the supervisor declines does it just go to the next highest vote, or do you have to have the election again?
Yeah, okay. We go to the next highest vote.
This is Gary. You know, one of the other aspects of this is that we do allow for write-ins on the election ballot.
Right. Which, so possibly, you know, if we pass the motion that says their name cannot appear without supervisor approval, and because we don't have it in hand, and then they get the supervisor approval, then they can go forward with a write-in campaign.
Well, I'm saying a write-in on as opposed to being on the nomination part aspect of it, but on the election aspect of it, we also allow write-ins there. And we get a fair number of them, sometimes only one or two votes, but we do get them. And then afterwards, we're trying to verify, making sure that they have supervisor approval in order to fill the slot.
Right. We still have to do that for any write-in that gets a substantial number.
Right.
The difference is in being able to select a checkbox or having to actually think of someone that's out there, and that's a really big difference. Most people who see someone on a ballot, they're going to click a radio button and say, yeah, I'll give this person a vote. So to me, that isn't as big of a deal.
How often does the supervisor not approve a person to serve?
Rarely. But this year, for sure, there's been at least one that the person said, oh, yeah, I want to do it. And then the supervisor said, yeah, we talked, and she said no, that she realizes now that she doesn't have enough time to participate in this. So, from my point of view, for those who are going through the nomination process, there is enough time in advance to go through and make that determination. So,
I mean, could something be stated I don't know on what level, but, you know, if you are interested in serving on staff council and want to be on the ballot, please first talk to your supervisor and have a conversation with them before nominating yourself or before others nominate you. Or
yeah, we can have that there, but a lot of the nominations come in from other people. So what we can do is in the email that we send them is say that your supervisor's approval will be required
right. If
that's the way we go down. But remember, we presented two motions that are one view and the other view, either require it or don't require it. And all we're looking for, I think, is a vote to say, yes, we require it, and no, we don't. So, again, I don't care which way we go. That's why we have two of the different motions here in front of us. We just need to determine which path we want to take.
Does anyone wish to put forward one of the offered motions?
I'm sorry. So I know there's two motions, but isn't it right now we require the supervisor approval? So shouldn't there only be one motion to change it?
Not before we put them on the ballot.
Oh, okay.
So what we've done right now is for those who have been interested, they go directly on the ballot.
Okay.
So right now we don't prevent that, but we do try to get in contact with the supervisor to know ahead of time. So at least in one case where the person had said, yes, I want to be on it, and the supervisor came back and said, no, we talked, then they weren't going to be on it. So
in other words, in accepting the motion to not require is basically leaving it as it stands.
Pretty much, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd be confident in that. If we haven't gotten a response from a supervisor, we won't prevent it from showing up.
So why thus the motion then?
That was what I was kind of asking. Why is there two as opposed to just one? That
because we have to codify it either way in the bylaws. So if we want to require it, we need to codify it somehow. If we don't want to require it, we need to codify it somehow, and that's all we're doing.
So I would move to put the motion forward for not requiring, since it's the way we do business at the moment, and we've only had one issue to address. If we move it to the other one, who knows what's going to happen. So
yeah.
You don't want to make them change based on one time thing. So
we have a motion to not require supervisor approval for inclusion of candidate name on ballots. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a second. Any further comments or questions on the motion? Online? All right, then we will move to vote. All those in favor of motion 212-233-2, a motion to amend staff council bylaws to not require supervisor approval for inclusion of candidate name on ballot during representative and alternate elections. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed?
Okay.
Online?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, we have a motion passed. A little bird in my ear is reminding me that someone has joined us. Would that be the chancellor?
Do we need to vote actually on the second motion too?
No.
No.
No. Oh, okay.
It was two possible ones would be voted on.
All right, EMR, are you done?
I hope so.
Then for Rural Affairs, Brad has submitted a written report and is not present today. Comments or questions? All right, then Staff Affairs, Mary Alice. Do you wish to say anything?
We had our first meeting. We had our first meeting and discussed the merge of Staff Affairs and Rural Affairs.
Can you speak up just a little bit, please?
Can you hear me now?
Louder. Are you on?
Now can you hear me?
No.
Okay.
No? No, it's on.
Okay, just talk.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
Beautiful.
So Staff Affairs and the merge of Staff Affairs and Rules Affairs, I think both committees have discussed it, and although there's pros and cons, I think what we've come down to on both committees is that we'd like to have regular meetings with each other but keep the two separated. So I think that was a good outcome. And we will have our next meeting on December 14th. And I'm new at this, so I'm still trying to get to know everybody's faces.
All right. Thank you for your willingness to step up and chair that committee.
Yeah.
Comments or questions for Mary Alice? All right, we'll move to item 11A, the Staff Alliance Healthcare Committee. As I noted previously, Gary submitted a report. I've made comments. As a reminder, I will take Abba Boltito's memo as chair of the Joint Healthcare Committee to Donald Smith and put it up on the Alliance blog for comments and feedback. Staff Healthcare Committee is reviewing and will discuss these items specifically. And if there aren't any other questions, we'll move on.
So when you put this up on the blog and people get to make comments, is there a possibility that change can be made?
What we can do, if there's strong enough feedback, Staff Healthcare Committee will discuss it. We'll discuss the particular issue and take a position on it and forward that position to the administration so that the administration hears from the Staff Healthcare Committee and the Joint Healthcare Committee. and hears from both. What they decide to do, you know, then will be up to the administration. And let me remind everyone here, when you're reading the statements that come out of the administration, that Joint Health Care Committee passed this, we're going forward, don't, the Joint Health Care Committee is not the decision-making body. They're an advisory body. Statewide administration makes the decision, not JHCC. So the statewide has a habit of casting, using the language that, you know, causes you to think JHCC did it, not us. Don't believe that. Okay? Obviously, that's an issue for me. If there's nothing else on A, the Staff Health Care Committee will move to the Compensation Committee.
I just want to let everybody know that Staff Health Care Committee is meeting on the 27th at 9.
Okay, thank you. All right, then on the Compensation Committee, as noted earlier, Brad and Mary Alice are your representatives on that committee. They met, and they have a to-do list, and we will be running. Mary Alice reminded me that once we have a draft of these compensation ideas, we will run them through Staff Affairs to get their feedback, and if timing permits, bring it to this group. But Staff Alliance will also see them, obviously because it's a Staff Alliance working group. So unless there are any other questions from my previous comments and this one, we'll go forward. All right, so then we're on item 12, external committee reports. And one thing that, you know, in the course of our pre-staff with the Chancellor, we talked about the challenges with all of these committees and membership and so on, and he indicated that he's working towards a central repository for the charters for these committees. So that's kind of in the past been left up to whoever owned the committee, so to speak, whether it was the provost or the vice chancellor for admin services or the athletic director and so on. The charters have kind of been floating around out there, and so he's working on getting them all in one place. Because I indicated to him the challenges we had with the RISE board. So unless there's any questions, or Gary, did you want to highlight anything with the Master Planning Committee?
No, I think it's pretty voluminous enough. Most people are welcome to call me for more clarification.
And for the record, I will say that the Chancellor's indicated that that Gary does a great job representing us and documenting that. All right, then, if there's no questions for Gary, we have a response from Britton on the Parking Advisory Committee. We also, on CDAC, the Chancellor asked that we not say CDAC was disbanded, that we use different language, for example, that it's pending or it's kind of floating and waiting for this diversity task force to outline next steps for it. So on your agenda and in your notes, please point out that CDAC has not been disbanded. It's on hiatus, as he put it. And then, of course, D, E, and F, and G have all not met. Technology tab, Walker.
I actually have an update on the back table there for the tab board. We met recently, I believe it was a week and a half ago on a Friday, and we went through 12 proposals. 10 of them we put forward to be funded. There is $200,000 that had come into TAB this year from the student technology fee. And as usual, 30% came off the top of that and went to OIT for support of classroom infrastructures and other things that go to benefit students directly. We ended up funding $120,000-some-odd to 10 of the projects to move forward.
Right.
And that's about it.
Richard?
Is there any review process on either how the money to OIT was spent or whether the 30% is still appropriate?
I don't think there has. So it's been automatic, and I don't think there has been any sort of real deep review of it. In fact, TAB ends up oftentimes voting to give more to OIT at the end for the explicit use in upgrading classrooms to be smart classrooms. But I don't know when our last report was to back from OIT related to what the money was spent on or, you know, how it really benefited. So, no, I don't know.
You know, it was Gary. In my time, we did actually request that from OIT, and basically we asked up ahead of schedule what it is they were going to be doing with the money. So they actually did give us a budget.
Okay. Just curious, because I was one who advocated for that 30% way back in the day, but we said it had to be a specific requirement that they get a refund back or else they get it.
It's supposed to be on each one of them.
Yeah.
And when asked about it at the last meeting, Michael Scott reported back that he thought the reports had been sent in, but he wasn't positive with Julie Lawrence moving on from OIT, so I'm not positive what's happened there. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any other questions for Walker on the TAB? All right, item I is inactive for the moment. Work-Life Balance Committee. Intercollegiate Athletic Council has a committee report. Any questions for Debbie on that? All right, then the People's Endowment. Debbie Gonzalez has a report. Any questions for Debbie Gonzalez if she's still online? No questions, no comments. We'll move on to 13, then, the Ad Hoc Committee reports, 13A, Communications Committee. We've taken action on that one. 13B, Staff Council Calendar Committee. Brad has attached a committee report and is absent. Gary, are you on that committee?
I am.
Is there anything you need to share with us?
No, we're just progressing apace with the final designs, and then after the election, then we'll be able to fill in the names correctly. And we're, you know, it's looking to be a nice calendar and a nice picture, and I think people are would be happy with it.
All right. Any questions for Gary then for the 2013 calendar committee? All right. Hearing none, then we are open for roundtable. Keep in mind, what is the time? 10:42. The chancellor indicated he might join us between now and 11. So we can not do roundtable today, given that he could join us at any moment, or we could do roundtable hoping that he joins us. Does anyone have anything for roundtable?
Nope.
And online we had Nicole, and that she just responded, Deb Gonzalez.
No, thanks.
Kat? Jennifer?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Gary?
No, kind of ironic being on calendar committee, but my calendars got crossed this morning, and so I apologize for joining late.
No worries. Are you in Fairbanks?
I am.
Okay. Anyone in the room then for roundtable? Then tell me what you think we should do. Should we hang out and chat on the off chance or the chance that the chancellor will join us, or shall we adjourn the meeting? And excuse me, little bird. Oh, and talk to him next time. Come on, people.
Yeah.
All right. We will.
He said he was going to join us between 10:30 and 11. We should.
Yeah,
yes.
Try to wait for him.
Yes. All right.
Or we could request a written report.
Good luck with that. Yeah.
That yeah.
All right. Then we will be on break, and if you hear a little beep, yell, and we'll hope it's the chancellor for the next 15 minutes.
Do we have the recording paused for the moment?
We do.
Okay.
Thank you, everyone.
So.
Okay, so I'm officially adjourning today's meeting. Thank you for coming.
I'd move to adjourn.
Thanks, Gary.
You're welcome. Those items that are that were handouts, are those going to be available to those online?
Yeah, there was only one, and it will go up.
Super. Thanks so much.
It's up already, Gary.
Super. Wonderful.
Thank you.